At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Good morning, boys and girls. It is Friday, July 28th, 2017, and football has finally arrived. The Green Bay Packers kicked off their 2017 season yesterday morning at 8:15 Central Time here in Green Bay. They practiced for exactly 2 hours and 15 minutes under beautiful conditions. It was between 70 and 75 degrees. There was abundant sunshine. There were fans everywhere, and it was just about the ideal start that you could ask for when it comes to a brand new season. My name is Michael Cohen, and this is the Packers Podcast. We thank you for listening. This is, of course, the Friday edition, so there will be a break between now and the next episode. There won't be anything on Saturday. There won't be anything on Sunday. But first thing Monday morning, we'll have a brand new episode for you. It'll take a look at everything that happened at today's practice out at Ray-Nitschke Field and everything that happens at tomorrow's practice out at Ray-Nitschke Field. And we'll get you all caught up first thing Monday morning. But before we do any of that, let's talk about what took place yesterday. Like I said, it was the very first practice, and as is usually the case at those types of events, injuries were generally the story of the day. First and foremost, Mike McCarthy talked about the two players on his team that are going to begin the season, or at least training camp, on the PUP list. One is cornerback Dimitri Goodson, who, as many of you know, suffered that horrific knee injury in the game against Washington last year on November 20th. Goodson tore his ACL, had surgery a couple weeks after the initial injury, and he's still recovering from that. Now, when I talked to Goodson during OTAs, he said that he had spoken to the team doctors, and they had sort of, kind of, maybe targeted the third week of training camp in terms of possibly getting back out on the field. Mike McCarthy this morning sounded a little bit less optimistic than that projection. He basically said that he doesn't have a timeline for Goodson, and they'll sort of play it by ear. So we'll have to see what goes on with Goodson and whether or not he can work his way into a cornerback battle that is going to be very deep and very intense because of the number of bodies and number of open spots after a disappointing season for the secondary last year. And the biggest piece of injury news of the day belonged to Vince Beagle, rookie outside linebacker from the University of Wisconsin. Beagle, of course, suffered a foot injury almost immediately upon joining the Packers on the second day of rookie orientation camp. He felt some sort of a strange feeling in his foot. Some tests were done, and it was determined that Beagle would need surgery to essentially alleviate a problem that began during his final season at Wisconsin. Beagle broke his foot during his senior year at Wisconsin last fall. He missed 2 games and he had surgery, but Beagle described this procedure as wanting to do it the right way. And so I don't know if that meant that things did not heal properly the first time, or perhaps he took some sort of a quick fix procedure in order to miss the least amount of time possible. He didn't really want to go into a lot of details about A, what happened last year, and B, what the specifics of the procedure were this year. But what we know is that this break was a Jones fracture in the fifth metatarsal on the outside of his foot, and Mike McCarthy said Beagle will miss a couple weeks of camp, and so that means he'll probably miss at least the first exhibition game, which takes place 2 weeks from yesterday. But Beagle should probably have 3 exhibition games left after that and a couple weeks of camp to get himself ready. Beagle spoke to the media today. He said that he's ahead of schedule. He feels really, really good. When he works with the trainers indoors at the Don Hutson Center, he's able to run, he's able to change directions, he's able to cut. No issues with any of that stuff, so he feels really good about where he's at. And Mike McCarthy echoed those comments by saying by saying he's really pleased with where Beagle is at as well. And the only other pieces of injury news were pretty minor, or at least they seemed pretty minor. Undrafted rookie tight end Aaron Peck from Fresno State was placed on the non-football injury list, which means that he came into Green Bay for his annual physical, and he already had some sort of a problem that was that took place before he got here. So in between the time that minicamp ended and before he got here for training camp, I talked to Peck briefly in the locker room. He said that it's just a very minor hamstring tweak. He feels really good, and he expects to be out on the field in a couple days. It was just a case of the medical staff being overly cautious at the start of camp on a day when the Packers aren't even in pads, so there's not a whole lot to be gained from it. And then the final little bit that we have in terms of injuries, we don't really know the extent of this injury, but within the last 10 minutes of practice, cornerback Herb Waters, who had really been coming on strong in the spring and had earned a lot of praise from not only cornerbacks coach Joe Witt Jr., but also Mike McCarthy himself, Waters walked off the field with the trainer. He didn't appear to be limping. He didn't appear to be holding his arm or anything like that. So I'm not entirely sure what part of the body even he injured. But he did walk off the field and into the Hudson Center with a member of the medical staff. So later today, when Mike McCarthy has his press conference, we should be able to figure out what is going on with Herb Waters and take a peek at the severity of that injury. Now, aside from that, there wasn't a whole lot to be gleaned from yesterday's practice, as I mentioned. Yesterday and today, the Packers are not allowed to wear pads as part of the new CBA agreement that was put in a few years ago. And so these are essentially the same types of practices with the same level of physicality and the same level of intensity that any of you guys may have seen during OTAs and minicamp. It's helmets, jerseys, and shorts, so obviously there's no hitting, there's no tackling, the blocking is at a minimum, and it is essentially, you know, not that valuable relative to what is going to take place on Saturday when everybody puts on their shoulder pads, everybody puts on their thigh pads, and there's going to be a lot of hitting and, as is the case with football, probably a lot more injuries and injury news to come. So, what did we learn yesterday? Well, the one thing that really jumped out to everybody was the performance of punter Justin Vogel. Now, for those of you who follow the team closely, you'll know that General Manager Ted Thompson made the choice to release Jacob Shum, who was the punter last year. He made that choice very early in OTAs, within a week of OTAs starting, and Shum was battling a little bit of an injury at the time. I think it was a back problem, if I remember correctly. So he had yet to practice in the spring when he was released. And so the Packers waited and waited, and then once the draft was over, they signed Vogel out of Miami. And Vogel was considered by at least a couple teams to be the top punter in this year's draft class, and it was the first time in a few years that zero punters were taken in the draft. I know that that's not necessarily a position that you think of when you imagine teams, you know, prioritizing their draft picks and ranking their positions and things like that. But the fact of the matter is that over the last few years, we had started to see at least one punter taken in each draft, and in the later rounds, obviously, but punters have become a significant weapon, and there are some teams that have felt it necessary to use a draft pick on those players. Now, Vogel was not one of them, but as I mentioned, there were at least one or two teams that viewed him as the top punter available this season. So why was he so impressive? Well, he punted 10 times. His first five were not against the rush, and the second five were against the rush. And, you know, for all of us that cover the team as media members, it's pretty much understood that the ones that happen without a rush are essentially worthless, because it's like saying to a guy, well, you know, let's go through one-on-one pass rush drills with left tackles and outside linebackers without pads on. And, you know, what are you going to get out of that? Not a whole lot. But you look at the second five that he had, and they were pretty darn impressive. His average distance was 49 yards, and his average hang time was 4.23 seconds. Those are all very, very good numbers, and very, very good relative to what the Packers have had in recent years with Jacob Shum in the 2016 season, and Tim Mastay for the handful of years before that. It should be noted, of course, that Vogel was punting with the wind. He had, I wouldn't call it a steady breeze, but certainly between 5 and 10 miles an hour at his back. back, so of course that's going to aid him. But in all 10 of the punts, even the ones without the rush, the distance was extremely impressive, the hang time was extraordinarily impressive, and for a guy that essentially has the keys to the car, and if he performs well, the job is his, this was certainly a positive step in the right direction, and we'll have to see how that continues to play out over the next couple of weeks here when, you know, he has more opportunities against the rush. He certainly will have plenty of opportunities in the exhibition games, and that will really determine his fate, because as we saw last season, Ted Thompson made the very late decision, I believe it was like August 25th or something like that, that he made the choice to release Tim Maste, who had been the punter for 5-6 years, and with only one exhibition game left on the schedule, he claimed Jacob Shum on waivers, brought him in, and Shum was the punter for the rest of the season. So Vogel needs to perform consistently well between now and the start of camp, because as we saw, even just a week or two left on the schedule is enough time for Thompson to make a change at that position. In terms of other things that we saw today, one of the things that really caught my eye was the poor ball security, really all the way around. Let's start with, you know, the most basic element of an offense, which is the exchange between the quarterback and the center. Corey Linsley, of course, is the first string center, and he's coming off ankle surgery after the end of last season. So he was back at practice, but he didn't take as many team reps as he ordinarily would have. So Don Barclay, the backup center, got pushed into the starting role for a lot of practice when the first team unit was out there. And there was a snap issue between Barclay and Aaron Rodgers. I don't know if that was Rodgers' fault. I don't know if it was Barclay's fault. I don't know if a defender got in there really quickly and maybe knocked the ball away or slipped and got his hand in there. So I don't know the specifics of it, but there was a quarterback center exchange with Barclay, and that sort of set the stage for a lot of other ball security issues. Ty Montgomery fumbled on a simple toss play where the quarterback tossed the ball to his right in the backfield and Montgomery just dropped it. Aaron Jones, one of the rookies from UTEP, had a fumble that was not even related to contact. He just dropped the ball. The running backs then did a pass-catching drill, and there were drops left and right. There were bobbles. There were catches that just did not look clean. There were body catches. It was not a very positive display of ball security from these running backs. Now, certainly that could be a case of the jitters. Remember, other than Ty Montgomery, they have 5 rookies at the running back position, and you better believe some of those guys woke up with some butterflies, because I bet very few, if any of them, have ever walked onto a practice field that has several thousand people, and that is the case, of course, at Packers training camp. So, in subsequent days, that's certainly something to keep an eye on, and if it does steady out, maybe it was attributable to nerves. But for the time being, that is a big area of concern, because not only do the Packers have a lack of experience at running back, but if those inexperienced players are unable to hold on to the football, that is going to be a significant problem. A couple other things that I noticed, just some odds and ends here. You look at the first team defense, and there were a couple interesting wrinkles at in terms of the personnel and the way they lined up and things like that. I'm looking through my notes here, so that's why I stuttered for a second there. I'm trying to make sure I can get you the accurate information in terms of who played where. And so as many of you have read in both the Journal Sentinel and the Green Bay Press Gazette, we've talked a lot about how even though Dom Capers plays a 3-4 defense, which means 3 defensive linemen and 4 linebackers, the Packers rarely, if at all, play that formation anymore. And that's because teams are passing the ball so often that you need fewer defensive linemen on the field and more cornerbacks and safeties to be able to cover receivers, tight ends, running backs, etc. So essentially, the nickel defense, which means 4 linebackers but only 2 defensive linemen, essentially that is now the quote-unquote base defense. And we'll take a look at what the Packers had in that nickel formation today. Up front, you had Kenny Clark and Mike Daniels as the 2 defensive linemen. You had, of course, Clay Matthews and Nick Perry at your outside linebackers. That was all pretty much to be expected. But then the back end of the defense was where things were A, undetermined, and B, a little bit dicey, with the Packers ranking 31st in pass defense last year. So out on one side, on the perimeter corner, you had Devon House, who was a Packers draft pick a few years ago, who left and went to Jacksonville. He was cut by Jacksonville, came back to Green Bay, And as of right now, he's the number one corner. You look opposite him, and they had Ladarius Gunter on the other perimeter position. Gunter finished the season last year as the team's number one corner due to injuries and poor performance by Demarius Randle and Quentin Rollins. And as of right now, he's the number two, still manning that outside position. In the slot, you had Demarius Randle. This is a position that he has wanted to play since he got to Green Bay for a couple different reasons. One, he was a safety in college. And, you know, many of you that are familiar with the game will know that safeties sometimes have to come down into the slot and cover receivers or tight ends when teams use four or five receivers. And so it's a position that he has some familiarity with. And it's also a place where you can get your hands on the football, in theory, a little bit more often. Why? Well, the nickel position for the Packers is a key blitzing position. We saw Micah Hyde blitz quite frequently last year, and of course the prototype at that position within the last couple of decades for the Packers is Charles Woodson, who was, you know, just an incredibly influential player from that position before he moved back to safety. So Randle wants to play that spot. He wants to have the opportunity to make interceptions, to rush the passer. And it's going to be really interesting to see if he can find some more productivity there than he found on the outside. In terms of the two linebacker spots, you had Joe Thomas, who was the dime linebacker and essentially their coverage linebacker last season. It looks like he's going to retain that spot again as of right now. He's atop the depth chart, which sort of shows you what the Packers think about Blake Martinez. Martinez is not getting first team reps hardly at all, so it shows you that he is not what they want at the coverage linebacker position right now. And it looks like Thomas has really carved himself a nice niche here after being an undrafted guy from Division I AA, or the FCS as it's called, South Carolina State. Next to Joe Thomas, you had Morgan Burnett. And Morgan Burnett, of course, is actually a safety, but as many of you saw last season, the Packers pushed him up into the box to play a little bit of outside linebacker, A, because, you know, he has the size to be sort of this small version of an inside linebacker, but B, he can also cover some of these faster, quicker guys, whereas Jake Ryan and Blake Martinez showed that they are liabilities in coverage. And then at the back end of the defense, you had, of course, HaHa Clinton Dix coming off a Pro Bowl season, the first Pro Bowl season of his career. And next to him, because Morgan Burnett moved up to linebacker, Kentrell Bryce comes in and plays next to HaHa Clinton Dix. Bryce, of course, was an undrafted free agent a year ago and made the team based largely on his incredible athleticism, and he played a lot as the season went on last year. So that's a look at the defense, the first team defense that we saw, and I'll probably wait until the Monday podcast to go through the first team offense, partly because it's pretty mundane. You know exactly what you're going to get there, with the exception of maybe the running back spot, and also because once the pads go on, I'd like to see a little bit more of what the rotations are going to be on offense, because that's Mike McCarthy's side of the ball. That's his baby. That's his brainchild. And so once the pads are on, we can start to see maybe some more creativity with the formations and things like that, because McCarthy will test some concepts and also bring in some new things that just might not be as relevant without the pads. But like I said, most of you know the personnel there anyway. There's really no big changes other than Martellus Bennett in the running back spot. So we'll probably take a look at that on Monday. And then I'm just going to mention one or two other quick things really fast here at the end of the podcast. You know, punt return. I spoke about this on yesterday's edition. We looked at how much of a change there's going to be on the special teams units for the Packers. You could have a new punt returner, a new kick returner, you have a new long snapper, and you're going to have a new punter. So the very first time that the Packers went out in a punt return drill today, they had four guys back there. They had two of them that you probably would have predicted, and two that maybe not as much in terms of, you know, things you would have forecasted going into yesterday. So they had Randall Cobb as the quote-unquote first-string punt returner, and then they had Trevor Davis, the rookie from last year, behind him. Then they had Quentin Rollins, the cornerback, and then they had undrafted rookie Monte Crockett, who is unbelievably fast. He's a wide receiver. He runs in the 4-3 range, and I don't know if he's necessarily a legitimate option returning punts, but it's certainly a guy that with his speed and agility is something that you'd want to try there. So keep an eye on those position battles going forward, because punt return and kick return are going to be really, really interesting to see. And then the last little thing I'm going to mention here is something that any of you that have been at practice recently or will be at practice in the near future are certainly going to see, and that is just the physical size of Martellus Bennett. You know, I think I've mentioned this before, either on this podcast or maybe even back with Bob when we were talking about potential free agents, I can't remember. But Bennett is just a monster of a tight end. And so there were a couple times today in team reps where either Kentrell Bryce or Morgan Burnett were asked to cover him. And it essentially looks like a basketball team where you have the power forward and he's being covered by the point guard. It is just remarkable. I remember during one of the TV timeouts, as the Packers call them, the water breaks, essentially, Bryce was talking to Bennett, just, you know, shooting the breeze in between drills, and it honestly almost looked like a father and a son. It was so ridiculous, the size disparity. And so it just makes you wonder, how can anybody cover this guy? And I think he can be a real weapon for the Packers, because, you know, just like he's shown in New England and even his good seasons in Chicago, and he even had a decent season in New York when he was there, this is just a guy that is a massive human being with abnormal athleticism for somebody that size, and I think it's going to pay real dividends for the Packers. So be sure to check that out when you're at practice. You know, not that you could miss it anyway. Like I said, thank you for listening all week. That wraps up the first full week of our daily format. I got tons of really nice messages from all of you guys on email and Twitter and all kinds of things, and that was really great. I really appreciate that. I'm glad so many of you are enjoying this podcast. We'll be back first thing Monday morning. I hope all of you guys enjoy your weekends, and I will talk to you soon.
So hush now, child, and don't cry. Your folks
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Granger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Granger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRANGER, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRANGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.